Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me. I'd like to take you with me deep in the heart of the Vatican, to the Sistine Chapel, where our guide, Professor of Fine Arts, Breda Ennis, breaks away from Michelangelo's masterpiece and takes a look at a Botticelli masterpiece on the walls there. Breda, we're going to take a look at a wall painting in the Sistine Chapel on the left-hand side, if you come in through the main entrance. We're going to give Michelangelo a miss and go over to Botticelli. It depicts the punishment of Korah, Dathan and Abiram.
Right? In fact, yes.
So what's so special about this?
Well, it's Botticelli is always special. And people tend to just think of Botticelli in relation to those famous paintings of his in the Uffizi in Florence. But here you have him dealing with a very strong religious subject, an Old Testament scene. And putting his marvellous talent and his very light way of putting lines, his very vaporous way of putting colours. Every scene in his paintings or in his frescoes tends to have a fluidity. And the same applies to this particular fresco. When you're looking at frescoes in the Sistine Chapel, the ones on the left are part of a series from the Old Testament, and the ones on the right are part of a series from the New Testament, done by various painters. They all have a link between them in terms of, like, stylistic link, but when you look at them individually, you can see the real painter per se, but they have worked in harmony. But you can look at the individual part when you look at them individually. So here you have in the background on the top part, like all of the other paintings, frescoes in Sistine and the wall paintings, you have this very pallid landscape going way, way back. A lovely sense of space at the back of the painting. I just call it a painting instead of a fresco because it feels very painterly to me, this piece. Then on the top part, you have a dark blue sky with white clouds, very clearly defined. And then you have three sets of buildings. You have what looks like a church on the left-hand side. On the right-hand side, you have the remains of a building from the Roman Forum. And in the middle, you have, in the background, you have an Arch of Constantine. And you can look through the Arch of Constantine into the distant part of the landscape. On the left of the arch, you have a hill with some trees and a church halfway up and a ship. You can see the ship actually docked right near the edge of the Arch of Constantine, which obviously is not possible in reality, but it looks lovely there. And then on the right-hand side of the arch is a tree on its own. And then various little bits of building. And then in front of all this, you have all the activity, the main story of this marvellous scene here, where rebels who rebelled against the authority of Moses, they refused to acknowledge his authority and insisted that Aaron is an usurper of the office of priest. So they are put to the test. And the actual title reads, The Rebellion Against Moses, the Lawgiver. So the prophet, standing before the altar, invokes the name of God against the rebels, while their tunifiers fall to the ground, and Aaron alone is spared by God. So the rebels, cursed by God, are swallowed by the earth. And their 250 followers are devoured by fire. Now, this again, you can see that the followers are all into groups and kept back from Moses. Now, you see Moses here three times on the same fresco. On the right, where he's being challenged. In the middle, where he is condemning. And on the left-hand side, where the sentence is being executed. So two of the followers, Dathan and Abiram, are thrown into the ground, into the earth. They're swallowed up, literally, with all the other followers eventually. And Korah himself only is saved. So here you can see in the middle that Moses looks very priestly because his robes give you the feeling of a senator. So they come very near to papal vestments in a sense. For example, in the center part you have Moses imperiously holding up a golden rod. And where he's holding it up towards Korah. And Korah is contorted, his body is twisted, and it's almost like he's being hit by a power which is stronger than him. And this is the power, obviously, that saves him, while his other two companions are thrown to the ground, turned over and falling, dressed in blue and dressed in gold, these two who are falling. And the peculiar thing about this golden rod that Moses is holding is, in the past, the Pope himself was given a rod of authority. Meaning the rod to discern and to punish where necessary. So it has a relevance in terms of the papacy, because we must never forget that in the Sistine Chapel, anything that you find on any fresco has some relationship to the successor of Peter and his role. There's another aspect here which is curious as well. For example, the three figures of Moses. If you look at his forehead, he has two clusters of rays each side of his forehead. This relates to the fact that when Moses came down from Sinai the second time, he had rays coming out of his forehead. Find in the past Moses painted with two little horns, but when Saint Jerome translated the Bible into Latin, he did not want light on anyone before Christ. So this is why they transformed these rays of light into horns. But how they resolved them, this painting here, was that they made, say, the horns divide into 10 golden rays. And some people think maybe that this could also be relevant, or could be represent the Ten Commandments.
He has the same robe, the same coloured robe, yes, three times.
Yeah. Because Moses here, in the sense, is a priest. A lawgiver. This again relates to where this fresco is in the Sistine Chapel relating to the Pope.
But it's really unusual to have the same figure three times in one fresco, no?
Well, he's turned it into a kind of a triptych. And this was a habit also in many of the works of Botticelli, where he's tended to divide his paintings or his frescoes into three sections. So you have one on the left, one in the middle, and one on the right. So hence you're repeating the figure with Moses on the right, who's defending himself, with Moses in the middle, who is carrying out God's judgment, so to speak, and Moses on the extreme left, punishing the wrongdoers. The centre part of the painting, just before the Art of Constantine, you see flames coming up where there are figures who are burning incense. There was the habit also in the past, when the new Pope rode in procession from St. Peter's to take possession, let's say, the ceremonia di possesso, the ceremony of possession of St. John Lateran's, he would have priests all along the route covering him with incense as he passed by. So this kind of incense here in this particular painting is used in the wrong sense, because the six figures here that you can see in the background in the center are offering false fire to the Lord.
Why false fire?
Because it's not offered in the proper sense. They are not obedient. they are not recognizing the true God. So, for example, if you look at the Arch of Constantine here, there's a curious little detail which maybe is not noticed very often. Right on the top of the arch, there is a collection of rocks and stones. You see them there on top?
Yeah.
Now, again, there's a constant reference in the Sistine Chapel artworks of any type to stones and rocks. And again, we're coming back to, upon this rock I will build my church. Sense here, the rocks are not put in an even way on the top. It's strange because if you look at the arch itself, it's very carefully done, it's meticulous. It's again, it's with all the golden decoration on a silvery kind of background. Again, gold and silver, the papal keys. And then again, you see the rocks on the top. So it's a sort of mysterious factor here, the way the rocks are put. They're just very casually put on top, as if somebody just put a whole bunch of rocks and stones on top of the Arch of Constantine, which is unusual. So it's hard to know what the meaning could have been. But anyway, archways, for example, the arches also relate, apart from the obvious relationship with pagan art or the early Roman period or whatever, when the Pope went in procession across the city for any reason, especially on Palm Sunday, they used to build temporary arches to follow his route so he would pass under these arches. And then these were dismantled, obviously, after that on Palm Sunday. So the arch became rather important in this sense also for the papal position. And this is why we tend to see lots of arches in the frescoes, the wall paintings in the Sistine Chapel. And most times we think, well, why are so many of them there? But I think they're all related to papal procession. Because you have the papal entourage coming into Sistine Chapel. They're all coming under the open door. They're going under the arch of the rood screen and they're walking up to the altar. Even the Last Judgment fresco in itself has a sense of the arch to the way the figures are put. And again, this is leading his people as the Pope does the Catholic Church.
Heartfelt thanks once again to Professor of Fine Arts, Breda Ennis, who is currently working at the American University of Rome and was also an artist herself. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.